Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, North Texas, where we finally had a day without rain. Can you believe that? I mean, can you believe that we actually had one day without rain? But that is the way it is here in North Texas. We've had so much rain, and we finally have a day without rain. But I tell you, the real highlight of my day is my guest. We have a wonderful guest today, Chris Kemp. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
How you been, my friend?
I am blessed today. How about you? I am so honored to really be on your show today.
Well, listen, the honor is mine because it's always fun to talk to other people who are motivated to participate in politics and who get active like the two of us do. Just very quickly, tell us about your show, what time it's on, what motivated you to get in. Why don't you just kind of give us a little biography?
Okay. Well, my fiance will tell you I've always been very outspoken when it came to issues of, you know, just basically home and family. But as I've watched the Idiot Box and I've noticed some of the things on the mainstream media that they don't cover, people are not informed as they should be, and it seems to be the old adage that a lot of it is dumbed down. And I listen to a lot of alternative news, different news channels than the mainstream. But I wanted a forum where people could come on, talk about their issues, and express what their beliefs are. I don't care if you are a conspiracy theorist or if you're an idealist. It doesn't matter. I want a forum where people of all can just come in and voice their concerns and voice their opinions without being trashed. And that was my vision. And my fiance was sitting next to me, then do it. So I just started looking through different areas of how to start a radio station or an online one. And it wasn't by coincidence that I ran into Blog Talk Radio. I tell everybody that this was not by coincidence. And I think I finally, and matter of fact, I know I've actually found a form where, and I've listened to a lot of the different shows. I've listened to some of yours, some of Will and Nikki's, and a few others. And I've noticed the openness that people on most shows have that are just talking about the issues and the forums that people don't have with the mainstream media or just in the general public, period.
That's right. And I think that's the beauty of Blog Talk Radio and those of us who, like you, I was interested in very similar objectives. And the beauty is that you can have these shows. Obviously, we have to live within certain reasonable good taste, obviously. I mean, you're not going to go on the air and start trashing people or saying stupid things about people. But I think at the same time, though, we do have a lot of freedom to cover subjects. And the beauty of it is of course, the fact that I do think there is a very significant share of the population. I'd like to get your thoughts on this. But there's a significant share of the population that I think is a bit disenchanted with the mainstream media, and they're looking for a different way of getting their news, and Blog Talk Radio, the blogs, and the internet have provided that. Do you agree?
Oh, I thoroughly agree with that. And what angered me the most, and I heard a statement that Trent Lott made that he wanted to shut down talk radio. I said, now that's it. They want to sanction it. They want to do all this to it. No. You're not going to attack my freedom of speech.
That's exactly right. And, of course, I think that remark, I know what you're talking about. They and many other senators were reacting to the reaction that they got for the immigration debate. And, you know, I agree with you. I think talk radio is the best thing that ever happened to our democracy. And I'll just give you a quick example of why I think talk radio is so relevant and so important. 20 years ago, if a news network had done a piece on any major public official, in this case, I'm talking about the CBS Evening News when they ran, or the CBS News when they ran that story on President Bush, and it ended up that the story was based on forged documents.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I'm not going to get into whether they did it intentionally or unintentionally, that's another issue. But the bottom line is that they ran a story based on forged documents. 20 years ago, or before talk radio, before blogs, that story would have never been challenged, because the only thing we would have been left with is the opportunity to write a letter to the editor, and they would have published a few, published not some, but we would have never been able to to do what needed to be done, which is to challenge that story. And you know, this goes both ways, because just like you can attack a conservative, you can also attack a liberal with bad information. So I mean, this
exactly.
is something
exactly
that you know, I think both sides need to understand that this cuts both ways. But in this particular case, I think talk radio and the blogs were able to in a sense destroy that story, and that's something that would have never happened without the talk radio, without the blog. So that's an example that we can make a difference in the final product here.
Exactly.
Let me ask you, that's
key for people's, you know, knowing the truth. We have to research the facts. You know, you have to do your research. And if you don't do your research, people will be walking around blindly like, wow, that was an awesome story. No, don't accept everything you hear or see. Research it for yourself.
That's exactly right. Let me go through some issues that may be of interest to you first, but I'll just kind of ask you a very easy one. And that's because it's of interest to me, and that's tonight's All-Star Game. Any thoughts on that?
No, not really. I haven't really been enthused in baseball for a long time, ever since the, I guess when they started outing everybody for steroids. I think I lost my interest in it.
Oh, okay. So that's about 5 or 6 years ago, I guess.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, my God. You mean to tell me all the people that I watch, like Barry Bonds, all these guys are using steroids? Oh, my goodness. I mean, that actually... And you'd be surprised, a lot of people that I talk to, they still follow baseball. They love it. But they don't, to me, from what I've seen and the people that I talk to, they don't have the fan base that they used to, because it's more about money.
Well, I think they have
the love of the game.
No, I think you're right. I think baseball, certainly, and you go back, you know, a generation ago, it was clearly the number one game. It has, of course, it has to compete now with so many other sports. And that, of course, is a major problem. Now, let me ask you another question. Does your show, or do you try, or try to have an African American perspective in your show, or is that just you know, did you, like for example, in my case, I do talk a lot about Hispanic things and things that matter to me. In your case, does that have an impact on how you try to cover the show or do the show?
Well, you know, maybe that might be to a point, but you know, I don't look at myself just as an African American. I'm tired of the label. I'm just an American. Bottom line, I was born and raised here. Yes, there are issues that we have to deal with in the African American culture, because they affect us today as they did 30, 40, and 50 years ago. You can't have, I don't care if you're African American, Hispanic, Caucasian, there are issues that affect you from the past that affect you now that have to be touched and that have to be dealt with. And I always want to, you know, I want to put a forum in where we deal with all issues, African-American, Hispanic, a little bit of everything, because in my family, we have a melting pot of almost every nation in our family. Just in my family alone, my grandmother was a Russian Jew. My grandfather was part, I forgot the term for the part of, I think it was Cherokee Indian, Navajo Indian, and black. My dad was Irish and Navajo Indian and black, and his grandmother, his actual father was a Cochrane, and he was Scottish. So I have a whole melting pot in my family. We have Filipino people in our family, Hispanics in our family, and we have people in the Bahamas. I mean, we've got family that I've never even heard of.
So the one benefit of that is, of course, the food is probably pretty good.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
The food is obviously pretty good when you've got that many different people cooking and that many different people with so many different contributions. I know in our case, of course, it's fairly easy. I was born in Cuba. Our family is from Cuba. Of course, I've grown up in the United States, so I really, in a way, I've been in the United States longer than I was in Cuba, and I've become a U.S. citizen. I became a U.S. citizen a long time ago, and I have a wonderful love and affection for this great country that gave us an opportunity to live here. So, but I do appreciate what you're saying about the labels, because I do think there's too much of that. There's too much of, you know, treating people as, you know, whether it's Mexican Americans or Indian Americans or Black Americans, African Americans. I wish we would drop that and simply say Americans. And because I personally, I would enjoy that a lot. I think it would do away with with some of the tensions that we have in our society. Well, let me ask you, how do you feel about the whole immigration debate? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I have a whole, I don't know, I listen to the news, and I look at the immigration bill, and I look at, and you can, you know, you can say I might be a little nuts, but the way they're doing that immigration bill, it's almost like making Hispanics or people that are from other countries another form of an underclass, which to me is not fair. It's like slavery all over again, where big business is actually able to hire people at a smaller wage and outsource. I don't know if you saw the YouTube video or not, where companies were showing other major corporations how to effectively hire people at a lower wage that were not from this country and not from America. They were literally showing this.
I think you're talking about, if we're talking about the same thing, I think it was a law firm, wasn't it?
Yes.
They were doing a seminar, and they were basically telling employers, and I think it was in Cleveland. They were telling employers how to go about hiring illegals, I guess, legally or something like that. I mean, I don't want to badmouth the firm without knowing everything. But when you talk about the slavery or the underclass, because those are two very interesting issues you're bringing up, are you talking about the temporary worker program? Or are you talking about the tolerance of people working here illegally? I mean, what are you talking about?
I think it's a combination of everything, okay? Because I go and I look at this back during the slave trade. This is how I relate it to, okay? It's just the form of modern day slavery. That's all it is. And then, you know, there are people that love this country that come from other countries, all right? Whether they're illegal or not. Now, the idiotic part about this bill is, how are you going to find 12 or 20 million illegal immigrants? You can't even find bin Laden.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Here's my suggestion. And I'm from the old school. Here's my suggestion. If you want to find them, offering amnesty to people, it just angers everybody. It really does. It angers everyone. All right, now you got to remember, this country, I'm torn between issue because this country was found by immigrants.
But no, you're right about that.
But when this country is being bought and sold, when our politicians are being bought and sold from special interest groups, then there's a line that needs to be dropped. There's a line that has been crossed that needs to be addressed. And the only way we're going to address it is if the American people pull together and say, this is what we're going to have to do. We've got the illegal immigrants in here. We need first to secure the borders. That's number one. It's been already stated a fact that they had terrorists going through the Mexican consulate in Iran, getting over here into Mexico and coming across the borders. That's been established. So where is the security for the borders first? Because you're not just talking about securing Americans. The illegal immigrants are just as much danger as we are. Now, if this is a country of give me your poor, give me your people that are looking to make a better place, then the infighting with our politicians needs to stop. But the first order of business is securing the borders.
Let me add something there, because I think you're exactly right, and I completely agree with you. And securing the border, what you're talking about, the Iran and Mexico, I think it was a story that appeared in the San Antonio Express, where a reporter from the San Antonio newspaper actually went through a series of articles in which he tracked down some people who were coming through the Mexican border. And one of the realities is that I don't think this is good for Mexico either, to have mm-hmm. its country. I mean, that's one of the, you know, if I was the president of Mexico or if I was a Mexican official and my country had all of a sudden become, you know, Ventura Highway, if you will, to get to the United States, that I would be very concerned about that, because these people are coming into my country. They're not good people. They're going to mm-hmm. corrupt my police. I mean, mm-hmm. they're going to bring a lot of problems with them. So that's one of the reasons why I think I've always supported the fence, because the fence will make it a lot more difficult for these people to get through. And then once they realize that Mexico is not the way to get through, then they'll have to come in some other way, but at least we have closed a major vulnerability, which is the U.S.-Mexico border.
Exactly.
So I agree with you 100% on that. The other point I wanted to make, and about the immigrant, this whole immigrant question is difficult for me because obviously I'm an immigrant, although I came here legally, and Cubans had a different way of coming in than others, so we had some preferential treatment, and I understand that. But at the same time, to me, the biggest problem, and I don't know what it's like in Memphis, I believe that's where you're from, but here in the Dallas area, the illegal immigration issue creates a very chaotic situation because our hospitals have to deal with this problem, our police has to deal with this problem, our schools, and I'm not even talking about the border where it's 10 times worse. So that's the other thing. I think illegal immigration creates a chaotic situation, and nobody likes chaos.
Well, let's take a look at the borders first. I mean, I'll give you an example. Brian Williams did a story, and I had to watch this because everybody was debating the immigration bill. Brian Williams did a story, and he was showing how illegal immigrants were coming across the border and obtaining illegal IDs, Social Security numbers. I mean, if you want to secure the country, you have to secure your borders first. That's just the bottom line. And if Brian Williams can get on the air and on the TV and show this information, then people need to be more aware of how the politics of this whole thing works. Now, when I used to work in the not-for-profit industry, there was an old saying we had that there are certain programs that are designed to fail, specifically to keep money coming in. And that's just the reality to it.
Now, Go ahead.
Say what you're going to say.
No, I was going to, because you raised two very interesting points, the one about the slavery, and I understand now what you mean by that. But the second point, which is so interesting, is the point you made about the underclass. And this is a point that I myself have raised many times, because, in fact, if you do bring into the United States 8 to 10, whatever the figure is, let's just for the sake of argument, let's say it's 10 million because that's an easy figure to calculate. Let's say you have 10 million people in the country and they are making minimum wage, which is what most of these people make. Mm-hmm. Because they're being illegal, they don't exactly have great negotiating, powers, and they basically work for whatever they can get. Very often if they have an honest employer, maybe he'll pay minimum wage. If it's a dishonest employer, he'll pay whatever he can get away with. But you've got these people, they're making minimum wage, they're not exactly bringing a lot of purchasing power with them at that level. So if you legalize these individuals, they will immediately have to qualify for social programs, because you cannot feed a family on $800 a month. So they're going to be qualifying for a lot of government programs, and that's where this whole issue of the underclass comes in. And I'm very worried about that, because I mean, if you create an underclass of people who keep having babies out of wedlock, who are not graduating from high school, I don't think that's good for the country at all.
Well, we can do a whole show, two or three shows on that one, Sylvia.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Maybe we should. We'll do it.
Go ahead. Say what you're getting ready to say.
No, I was going to say that's my concern, that I think, to create an underclass, if you look at, unfortunately, there are some very serious family problems in this community. There's out of wedlock problems, and that's not a healthy sign. I mean, that's the easiest way in the United States to get into the poverty cycle is to have babies out of wedlock or not to graduate from high school. And unfortunately, those two problems exist way too much in the community.
Exactly. And I'm, like I said, I'm still from the old school. A lot of it does start at home. As a parent, what do you teach your child? What would I teach my child? What do I allow them to watch TV if I allow them to watch TV? We have to educate our children. We have to educate our neighbors. And we have to be more involved. I had a friend of mine ask me the other day, what do I do if I don't know anything about politics or if I'm not interested in politics? I always suggest you might want to pay attention to politics, because politics is always part of your life. I don't care if you're in an office, you have work politics there, you have politics across the board. You might as well know what's going to affect you and what's not. And the issue of, you know, keeping a stable family is a large issue in this country that has not been addressed. We've got kids that are missing. You know, there's over 800,000 kids missing a year that nobody addresses. They raise money for it, but nobody addresses. What do we do? How do we stop it? Where do we find, how do we find out who's going after these missing kids? How do we find out whether kids are being abused? You know, I mean, it's a big struggle for a single parent. And when you're creating, and when you have another underclass being thrust into the mix, like you said, you're creating even more problems.
That's right, because it's all going to cost money. And that's it's not only a great social problem, but it's also going to cost a great deal of money. This afternoon, changing gears a little bit, but this afternoon when we spoke, I told you that I had three African Americans among my favorite places in my blog. Mm-hmm. The first one, of course, is Herman Cain, Thomas Sowell, and Dr. Walter Williams. Now, the reason that I put them in my blog and in my favorite places is because the three of them, I think, represent what I consider to be a very positive trend in the African American community of self-reliance and moral responsibility and taking mm-hmm. control of your life. I really would like to get your thoughts on this, because I have always felt that the Democratic Party has created, whether they did it on purpose or whether it happened intentionally or unintentionally, I don't know. But the bottom line is that there's an underclass in this country, and they've created a dependency. Do you agree with that, or do you feel
I do agree with that, but that's on both sides of the aisle. That's not even just a Democratic issue, because if you look at this immigration bill, the immigration bill almost does the same thing. It's creating another underclass and allowing things to be easy. Yes, there should be some programs, and this is one of my biggest harps, that there need to be programs for people when they come out of jail to wind up being, to be trained back into the system of society of working and then pushing a person out on their own. It's like the old saying, you teach a person how to fish, but they have to take the fishing rod and do it themselves. But you also have to show them. I mean, there's a lot of things this country has gone backwards on. I remember we were talking about this last night, Will and Nikki, on my show, where when I was coming up, you had to get a job. And my first job when I was a kid was throwing newspapers. That was my first job. So I learned the value of the dollar from that. All of this has been missing in the mix because, as you said, we've had so many programs that allowed a lot of people just become lazy. And some of these programs were good programs, but people just got lazy and got used to getting the handout. You know? Change. There ought to be limits. Okay, now we've gotten you this far. It's up to you to do the rest.
Now,
You're talking about your
first job. My very first job was at a pizzeria in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And it was, I don't even know if it's still there, but I used to go on Friday afternoons and after school and Saturday nights, and we used to do dishes. And it was a tough job. I mean, the people were pretty nice, and the owners were pretty nice, but it taught me a great deal about work, and it also really taught me at a very early age, when I was 17, 18, it taught me that I didn't want to be a dishwasher, you know, that I wanted to do something better with my life, because I realized at an early age that I had different ambitions. I mean, there's nothing wrong, of course. I don't mean to downplay, because work is work. But mm-hmm. it certainly taught me the value of work. But one of the issues, and I, like you say, you know, we probably could do six or seven shows, and we will. We'll do a lot more of these joint shows because, it sounds like we have a lot of stuff in common. But very, very quickly, let me just ask you a question. Do you think that African Americans are getting their money's worth out of the Democrats, considering the incredible support that they give to the Democratic Party? I mean, they vote 90% Democrat, and do you think they're getting their money's worth for that?
Oh, please don't make me laugh. No. Because, the bottom line for me, and this is just my own personal opinion, the bottom line for me, if you, and I have to separate it by the term Republican democracy, because they both pretty similarly mean the same thing. I think that this division between the Democrats and the Republicans, it's the problem in this country when you have a division like that. That's where it stems from. That's where all of this stems from, is division in the politics. And most of their points of view, if you look at how, I always look at the voting records, I go online and I look at the voting records of the Democrats and the Republicans, and normally they're almost neck and neck when it comes to votes on certain items. There's really not much difference. I can reach across the aisle on both sides and say, okay, you've got a point here, and I like that idea over here from the Republicans. I can go to the independent side and say, I really like this idea. The Democrats and the Republicans, nobody is getting their money worth at all, period. We're not, number one, the Democrats, as well as the Republicans, have sold themselves out, as I said, to big business, to the big lobbyists or the big corporations. We have the best Congress and Senate that money can buy. So, no, we are not. As Democrats and or as Republicans, you're not getting your money's worth. I'm sorry.
You're saying no one is.
You're not being represented from no one.
Yeah, no one. Yeah. I don't know. Now, you do include big labor, though, as well. I mean, because we talk about big business, and I think big labor is a part of it, too, because the labor unions have incredible influence on the Democrats in this case, just like you say, business on Republicans. But the labor unions, for example, the teachers union is the primary hurdle to get something done about cleaning up the schools in the inner city. I mean, we have inner cities in this country where the schools are a disaster, where it would be wonderful to have school choice, where to give the parents a voucher and say, look, go out and find a school of your choice, but it's the teachers union that is keeping that from happening. And I think that's an example.
That's a big problem.
It's a big problem because here in Dallas, and we have a fairly decent public school system here in Dallas. I mean, for being a major city, it's a fairly decent public school system, but there are areas of Dallas, just like in many other big cities, where the schools could really improve, and there's only so much budget that the district has. But if those schools were basically turned over to the private sector, or parents were allowed to choose a school, I think the parents would be happier in many cases. I think the kids would get a better education. At the very least, it would force the public schools to compete for these students, and they're not doing that right now. They have a monopoly.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And that is a fundamental idea between the teachers and the parents. I remember, now I go back to when I was a kid, like I said, I'm from the old school. Your teacher would invite your parents up to the school and say, this is what's happening with your student. This is what we need to work on. Why can't the teachers get together with the parents and the parents work with the teachers? This is where the change is going to have to start happening. If the average citizen, if the average person feels like they don't have to get involved in politics, wrong. You do. If your child is going to school, you're dealing with a political issue. If you're going to work, if you're paying for gas, if you're paying taxes, this is a political issue. This is a political country. You have to deal with it whether you like it or not. If the parents and the teachers would get together and start working on rehabbing these schools, the schools themselves need to fight for better materials, better computer systems, better learning systems for their students, better curriculums. The curriculum as they're set up now is not the curriculum I had when I was in school. It's not.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the points. Yeah, that's one of the points that Walter Williams made on one time. He was on the radio, and he was talking about he grew up. I believe he said in Harlem. He grew up in Harlem back in the 30s and 40s, and he was saying that those schools back then were segregated. Nobody disputes that, but but he felt that the schools were much better in terms of the quality education, and that was true of any school, not just the ones in Harlem in general. But again, this is a subject that I personally get very interested in, because I think school choice is the way to go, in my opinion.
Oh, exactly.
I think school choice is the way to go, because it forces the schools to compete, it forces the teachers to and 99% of the teachers are doing a good job. I'm not a teacher basher. I think most of them are doing a good job. My kids go to the public school system, and we're happy with our teachers. We have a great principal in our school. But I'm talking more in terms of some of the poorer kids, the ones who don't have some of the advantages, let's say, my kids have. In some of the poor areas, I think the school district is really failing the kids, and the politicians are failing the kids because they're in the pockets of the labor unions. In this
you
case,
took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah. But listen, you're not going to believe this, but we've actually gone through our time, and that's what happens when you're having fun. But I will tell you this, let's do this again. You're a great guest, and I think you and I are going to be on Will and Nikki tomorrow, I believe, to talk about...
Yes, we are, and I'll invite you on my show, and we will talk about that later, but I definitely want to have you on the show, and I have
an all-hour
show.
Give me, send me an email and let me know when, and that way I can call in, you know, pretty much any time. As I said, the other night, I had to go out. I had family in town, and I had to go out that night, but definitely I would love to do it because we need to talk about these things, and this is a great forum.
Exactly. And Silvio, I'm going to tell you right now, you are welcome on my show anytime you want to come.
Well, you send me an email when you have an opening, and I'll be happy to do it because, as you can tell, I love to talk.
Exactly. I love it. Silvio, thank you so much. It's
my pleasure.
You have a great night, and be blessed, my friend.
And I hope that Barry Bonds hits a home run tonight because they're playing in San Francisco. That would be interesting if he did.
That would be, because what would this make him?
Well, of course,
this
it wouldn't
next
count.
Home run?
Well, it wouldn't count for the chase of the home run record because it's an exhibition game, being the All-Star game. But he's only five away, or five or six away. But you know, there was a little controversy as to why he didn't participate in the home run derby. And last night I saw an interview, and he basically said, "Look, my body just cannot handle it." I mean, this guy's 43 years old. And I think a lot of people forget, you know, what playing every day and being out there on your feet 3 hours a day and swinging a bat, what that'll do to you physically. And last night he said, you know, I just couldn't do it. I just didn't think my body would hold up through the home run derby. So, you know, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on that, since I have no reason to doubt what he's saying, you know. But,
okay.
Chris, you have a great day, and we'll do it again.
Will do. Thank you, my friend. You be blessed.
Thank you very much. We'll talk to you later. Well, as you
all
can
right.
tell, that, oh, thank you very much. Bye-bye. As you
all
can
right,
tell,
Sylvia.
Yeah, let me say goodbye here. And Chris Kemp, of course, another friend here in the Blog Talk Radio. And as you can tell, he's an extremely interesting man, very interesting to talk to, has a very unique perspective on issues, and that's something that always makes the show more interesting. So goodbye, everybody. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.